Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am the...
Hi guys, this is Jonathan Varnke, your host, and this is Off the Grid in South Africa, the practical guide to shedding load shedding. This is episode 2, how to find the right solution for you, and spoiler alert, it's probably going to be solar. But then we go into what kind of solar, how much, what are the different components, just a basic education on how a solar power system works and what to look out for, what's good, what's bad, that kind of thing. I chatted to a couple of experts and got some great info. And then from this episode, you can go on to more specific questions like costs and how not to get cheated and all that kind of thing. So hope you enjoy. Okay, to get right into it, let me just say that solar is the most commonly recommended solution that I've heard during my interviews with various experts. A lot of them, of course, install solar systems, so that's what you're going to hear. And the other options are esoteric and strange and not really applicable to South Africa. For example, geothermal, hydroelectric, wind power. We've got wind power, but it's on a fairly large scale. On a home scale, it doesn't really work out. At scale, solar is your best solution right now. Diesel generators are, of course, quite popular. But to be honest, I haven't researched them fully. I will do an episode if someone asks me to, but in my opinion, it's not a great solution because diesel is going to get more expensive. Generators are loud and dirty. The maintenance is expensive and it's not really an alternative energy source. It's just burning more dinosaurs. But don't just take my word for it. Here's Shane Acar from Maxicoms.
So I think at this point, solar is obviously the most attractive in terms of return on investment over a period of time. But each technology does have its place. So I think it's quite important for us to understand who the customer is, where they are in terms of, do they own the property? Do they not own the property? Are they in a lease? How long is the lease? You know, all of those questions are imperative. We like to ask that because when you do solar, it is a longer term return on investment in terms of that investment, but it does generate big savings. So that's why it is a good option to go for. But if you don't own the home and or own the business property, then removing it and reinstalling it is a cost. That's why we always try and understand the customer first. So whether it's a customer that wants a little fiber UPS router for their house, along with a little portable trolley so that they can have the entertainment on in the house, we do those types of solutions too. So it's also how much do they want to spend? How important is it for them to have those things on during a load shedding session or whatever the case may be? Obviously, generators are cheap to acquire. Huge cost to maintain, huge cost to run in terms of diesel over a period of time. So with big corporate businesses, we do grid-tied solutions where we then help by reducing that expense on the Jenny diesel, because when there's grid and when there's sun, that business runs totally from the PV.
PV stands for photovoltaic. He's referring to the panels.
So that eliminates huge costs on diesel.
Okay, so let's just agree that solar is the way forward. And now let's deal with the question of how far off the grid can you get? I remember when I was planning this podcast, one of the first comments I got upon sharing the idea for this show was that you can't really get fully off the grid. Well, you can, but it's expensive. Here's that story from Jean-Claude Malingret, who is a senior software engineer at Rubicon, but formerly the CEO of MLT Inverters and formerly a lecturer at UCT.
How off the grid can you get? And is it necessary? You can get completely off the grid. I've personally done that at my house, and I've got 7 people living in my home. But you do have to switch all your heating to gas. The heating is just so intensive on your batteries, and that you need to spend a fortune on batteries to actually boil water from solar. So if you can just take care of the heating with gas, that substantially reduces your need for batteries, which is the most expensive part of the system. So you could definitely go off-grid. Is it necessary? Well, it's nice to be completely independent from Eskom. I mean, I've never experienced load shedding before, at home or at work, because we are very independent there. Financially, does it make sense? Currently, I think to have a hybrid of Eskom, using them to charge your batteries with the solar right now, is still financially makes more sense. Though they are pushing the people with disposable income into the total independent sphere by increasing that base levy, you'll see in your electrical bill, this base levy has started to appear, and it's been going up more and more. So it's based on just having a connection, they're going to charge you 2,500 to 3,000 rand a year. So they're making the argument for going totally off-grid stronger every year, but we're not there yet.
Okay, so assuming that all of your heating is taken care of by gas, how much money do you need to invest in solar to have complete autonomy?
Well, for our house, we said there's 7 people, it's probably bigger than most households. It's about 350,000 rand. Most of that goes to the batteries. I can ride through about 2 or 3 days of bad weather. But that's if I'm just alert, you know, you turn off lights when you leave a room, you don't leave things on, turn off computers at night. So in June, July, I'm doing a lot of that to make it through. But if you're going to do a hybrid situation, you can do a much smaller battery bank. So I would say you could probably be immune to load shedding and have some sort of autonomy around 180,000 rand for a classic family of, like, say, 2 kids and 2 adults.
Okay, so if you don't switch everything to gas, if you're just getting a big solar power system to take care of all your needs, how much is that going to cost? Let's go back to Shane.
Getting totally off-grid, I mean, there's a customer of ours in Atlantic Beach Estate. He's spent R1 million on his system. And
I see 40 kilowatts. And whereas most inverters are providing, what, 7.5 at a pretty...
Well, you get all different. So you get 3s, you get 5s, you get 8s, you get 12. There's a whole range of different size inverters. So this customer's got 8, 8, 8 and 15. And then obviously battery tanks accordingly. And I mean, he's got a full day and full night autonomy. So as long as the sun comes up tomorrow, he doesn't need Eskom. But if there's rain for 3 days, how is he going to charge his battery tanks? Then he's not going to make the night. So that's why going totally off-grid costs a fortune, because you need to have battery tanks for days to get truly 100% off-grid. Yeah. So that's not really what we're trying to achieve with customers. It doesn't make financial sense. You know, a lot of what we do is your essential load type circuits or your solutions where customers are able to save 80% on their municipal account.
Madness. This is...
No kidding!
So that's where the sweet spot seems to be. Getting rid of about 80 to 90% of your municipal account. Okay, so those are obviously some very big numbers. And we don't all want to power every appliance in our home during load shedding. That's not really necessary, in my opinion. So let's talk about the intervening steps between being stuck in load shedding and having complete autonomy. So by the time I got to the end of my conversation with Neil Barrow from Solar Advice, I had a pretty good idea of what the progression is.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like this is the progression of how much energy you replace, right? So there's a UPS system, which is a 1,000 rand box you can get or take a lot. And all that does is run your Wi-Fi. That's all. Yeah. Then you go up to like one of those little inverter cube things, right? Yeah. Which might have a lithium battery and might have a lead acid battery, but its goal is to run your Wi-Fi and then maybe your TV and then like one light. And then you don't want to go too crazy beyond that. So there's, and that cost then goes up to between maybe 5 to 10 grand. The next step after that will be something installed into your home's electric thing. And it feels like the cost jumps and what you get out of it is a few more lights, but you're still not using your hairdryer, you're still not using your geyser, that kind of thing.
Okay, so if you don't have the money for a solar power system, or if you're okay with not running certain appliances, if you can make a plan around load shedding, and you just want Wi-Fi and a light and a TV to run, which I think is probably quite a lot of people, then you'd probably be quite happy with just a UPS system for Wi-Fi and candles, or a trolley inverter. So the trolley inverters are very popular, and they used to mostly be lead acid gel batteries, but now lithium is certainly taking over, and there are some major issues with lead acid, which I talked to Shane from Maxicoms about.
So what happens is with your gel batteries, generally they can do a depth of discharge of 40%. So in other words, your battery can run from 100 to 60%, and then it must start recharging it. Okay. The moment you start running, so that's why you'll see like these little portable solutions, for example, they work really well if you put a small load on it, because then you can get that to run for 3 years if you're not discharging that battery past the 40%. So we've sold, I mean, in August, we sold 4,000 of these little units. Wow. And we've had a few comebacks, but the reason we've had comebacks is because people have gone and plugged a 60 watt light lamp into it, as opposed to the advice we gave them, a 5 watt LED light. So as a result, they've pushed that battery past its capabilities in terms of its depth of discharge, and now it no longer holds a charge.
Just out of that, there's obviously a client education problem in terms of, because I've got a lead acid inverter battery thing, and I killed it with a gaming PC, which draws 500 watts or whatever it is. So I must have, I think at least once or twice, I drilled that thing down to nothing. I took it back to Mustek, and they were kind enough to replace it.
Yes.
But I think probably the public perception is, I've got a rechargeable battery. I run it to the bottom, and then I charge it back up. That's how rechargeable batteries work. Not, I run it down to 60%, and then I have to recharge it. So obviously there's like a gap there that needs to be filled, right?
Correct. So that's why people go and buy UPSs and use them as inverters, because they think, oh, well, inverter is 6,000, UPS is 2,500. I'm going to go with a UPS. And then after 3 months, they're like, why is this thing not working anymore? You know, the technology of a UPS, what its actual function is to catch the load, to enable you to switch something off safely, or for the generator to kick in and take over and run with the load. A UPS is not designed to cycle down, cycle up, cycle down, just kills the battery, and eventually the battery dies. The reason your battery has now died is because you've discharged it, you're running too much. So either you need to add an additional battery into the system to give, so that you don't discharge more than 40%, or you need to go for something that's lithium. So the advantage of the lithium over the lead acid and deep cycle gel batteries is those batteries can do a much deeper discharge. So they can go, for example, like ours can go 90% in terms of the depth of discharge. So 100 down to 10%, and then it must go back up to 100, and that's one cycle. So that's why your lithium is more cost effective, because you can run it, you need less batteries, but you can discharge them more, but they'll also do more cycles in terms of the battery. So like ours, for example, some of them do 6,000 cycles.
One cycle a day is 6,000 days.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure what 6,000 days is, but it's like, I'd hate
it's
to
say. It's a good 5-7 years or something like that. It's a long.
I think it might even be longer than that, actually. I think
so. 6,000, eh?
6,000 days, yeah.
Divided by 365 equals, okay, I was wrong. 16 and a half years.
60, yeah, there we go.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, 16.7 years, yeah. So, but again, if you're not discharging your battery, so what some guys do is they stack additional batteries so that they don't even run one cycle a day. They run one cycle every 2 days, because then they double up on the capacity.
You'll be long gone out of that house before you need another one, put it that way.
Shane does have a warning, though, that not all lithium ion batteries are equal.
And that's what people don't understand. The consumer doesn't understand. They go, I'm getting myself a lithium battery. It's the best thing ever. Everyone says get lithium, but they don't look at the technical specs of the battery. And as a result, you might find that you might pay 5,000 Rand for a battery compared to our battery, but you have to buy two batteries to get the same life out of those batteries. So then actually you're spending 35,000 more, but you're looking at now, oh, hold on, okay, this one's 35, this one's 40. I'm going to take the 35.
Yeah.
Because that's just how the consumer sort of mindset works.
It's the same basic kilowatt output, so cool. I'm just going to...
Yeah, so it's 5 kilowatts. Okay, happy days. Cool, this one's cheaper. I'm going to go for this one. But then they don't look at the technical aspects of the battery. And that's the critical stuff.
The technical aspects of batteries is kind of out of the purview of this episode and maybe this entire show, but this comes down to who you can trust and who is providing quality products. So have a look at episode 3, Who Can I Trust, for more information. Okay, what about safety?
And lithium ion now, the technology, which is LiFePO4, I think you pronounce LiFePO4, yeah, which is not the old lithium, because people think, oh, if I put in a warm place, or is it going to explode?
Right.
You know, gone are those days as well.
Like, okay, that I was wondering about that safety and all that stuff.
LiFePO4 is very safe. And it's also, I believe it's somewhat biodegradable as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not as dangerous. You know, lead acid, I mean, it's got acid in the name.
Yeah,
so,
it's a giant Duracell battery that will just destroy everything. Yeah.
It's so the lithium ion, very safe and lasts a long time.
And by hybrid, when someone says a hybrid thing, they mean they're still connected to Eskom plus you've got your own system? Or does it mean for example, that you've got a diesel genie in the back in case you're solar, in case the sun doesn't shine.
So hybrid means you can have multiple power sources, and also that the inverter has the capability to push to non-essentials and the capability to push back into the grid.
Is it all depends on your appliance. So, for example, if you've got a 5 kilowatt battery and say you've got your electric kettle, microwave and all that, and you want to use those things, right? So if you want to use the kettle as well as the, you know, whatever appliances that you might be running in the household, so say all the other appliances work out at about a kilowatt, okay? And say your kettle, when you first turn it on, is that initial pull.
So Neil will mention this a couple of times. When appliances are turned on, they often draw more electricity than their quoted wattage for a brief period of time. This is because they have electric motors or compressors or resistance coils that need a surge of electricity to start up or to heat up. It's called inrush current. Now you know.
So say that exceeds 1.5 kilowatts, then it's going to trip your battery because your capacity of a 5 kilowatt is, you know, 2.5, right? So then it will trip. And that's why people, a lot of the time, they're like, well, you know, I don't understand it. I've got like, you know, 80% left in my battery and it tripped. It's like, well, that's the limitation of your battery, and it's your kettle's fault that's causing it, you know? Because every time, we have it a lot. As soon as I want to make a cup of tea, I love it, you know, load shedding happens. I got so stressed out, I went to go make myself a cup of tea, and everything tripped. I'm lucky. Yeah.
Did not help my stress levels.
Yeah. I think probably make the cup of tea before the before load shedding.
Plan your life a little.
Dr. Banner. Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm off.
You're kidding!
There are a number of steps you can take before you install a big solar power system to reduce the price of that system. If you can change any cooking or heating elements in your house to gas, that'll make a huge difference. And then after that, you start reducing the amount of electricity you use. So geyser blankets, heat pumps, solar geysers, condenser tumble dryers, LED lights, and more. And then at that point, it's a good time to go and get a quote for a solar power system. So for some informed advice on that build, let's go back to Neil from Solar Advice.
Water heating is the most expensive, typically. That will account for somewhere, you know, it can be as up to 40% of your energy bill. So that's like 40% less of a system that you need, you know.
Kids having baths every night.
Yeah. So once you've got, I got a solar geyser, a big solar geyser in my new house now. I'm actually really amazed on how well it works. I've literally got hot water on tap all the time because it just warms the water all through the day. There's a small little pump which basically pumps from the tank because I've got a what they call a retrofit. So new houses, I don't know if you've seen them where they got the geyser on top. Yeah, so they got the geyser integrated in with the tubes. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a panel, a flat panel. Well, mine's an afterthought. So they put tubes on the roof and then it plumbs into the actual tank. So all it does is circulates the water around the tubes. Well, not inside the tubes, but along the copper top there. And basically the sun, it works on UV and it heats the liquid inside of the tubes and that heats up the water. So as it passes through, it heats the water up. So it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like kind of does it that way. And there's a small pump that just runs, which is like uses hardly any power at all, right? So it just pumps the water around and then you always got hot water. And then say in the winter, for example, the weather's not so great. So the water only gets to a certain temperature. You only need to use so much power just to get it over that like 50 degree threshold. So that's like the first investment I'd ever make with solar geysers. Heat pumps, I've had a heat pump as well. I had a 5 kilowatt heat pump, which is probably a little big for what I need it for, but it's a good family size heat pump.
What is a heat pump?
The heat pump literally does the same thing as a solar geyser. You know, the water goes in, gets heated, goes back into the tank. Mm-hmm. And the difference between energy can be, you save yourself like sometimes 60%.
Okay, so let's just clear that up there. There's two options. There's the solar geyser, and then there's the heat pump, and they do basically the same thing. Although from what I've read and heard, the heat pump has greater efficiency and can save you more money.
LED lights, which is an obvious one, but they're not normally the power hog. So that's like the leanest system. You could probably push it so it's a 85% coverage, and then if you're really wise with electricity, you will be able to get to that point, I think, you know. And I'm actually a proponent for this, is that rather start with something small, mm-hmm. find out what your limitations are, and then, you know, you kind of work, you build your system over time. And the one advice I kind of give with that, so say someone has got a 2,500 Rand bill or 3,000 Rand bill. They haven't done their geyser, you know, they haven't done a tumble dryer and they got pumps, right? So the first thing is, you know, cool, I'm going to get a geyser, a solar geyser. So I'll take that kind of 20% off my overall consumption. So that's 20% less of $3,000. Then say my tumble dryer, maybe work that in for maybe 15%. Then you can take that 15% out. So you can size it down a little bit. And if you've got, like, if you want to have a number in your mind before you start your journey, that's probably a little bit of math that you can work out. And then you can go, cool, well, this is the size. Then what you can do is you can even reduce it a little bit more. I'd say even like 15%. So then say, for example, for that bill amount, we would normally do like 24 panels. But for this exercise, we do 12.
Yeah.
And then from that, then you can go, cool, I'll do 12, see how I get on with it. And the way you'll find that out is that you will get, number one, get an ESCOM bill every month. So you can go, well, I'm using the X, Y, and Z. And if you're using too much power for the size of an inverter, it will trip.
Okay, so you mitigate the costs as much as you can, and then you look at the minimum viable product solar installation that you can get that is also expandable, upgradable. And then you adjust your habits of when you use appliances, how much you use, and all that to kind of refine it. And then if it still keeps tripping, then you look at increasing the size. And also, what's interesting is that I think people with solar end up playing this little game of optimization and efficiency, usually using the tracking app. So let's talk briefly about that.
If you look at the Nova app that we use on our product, for example, so what you can see at the moment is the PV is producing 12 kilowatts of power off his roof. His load is 5.8 and his batteries are still at 68%. So he's still got a way to go to fill up the battery tank. And yes, obviously it's a massive battery tank. But right now it wouldn't be feasible for him to be pushing energy back into the grid for the low kilowatt rate that he's going to earn on it.
Okay, we kind of slipped into the territory of episode 4, selling energy back to the grid. So check that out for more information on that. Let's get back to solutions.
How many clients do you have on this app?
About 400.
This is what an incredible... So it's just a live feed.
Yes.
So do they have a radio transmitter in them, or is it connected to their fiber?
Cloud account. So we put a Wi-Fi dongle onto our system, and then that connects to the client's Wi-Fi in his house. And then that provides the cloud, the live data. And then we dial into the cloud platform. The client also gets this app as part of the thing. So what's nice is they can drill down. They can have a look at their consumption. They can have a look at what they're utilizing or what their solar is producing.
Okay, so how much power do you actually need for your home?
I would say like your maximum load, if you were to turn everything on, this is how we determine like an inverter size. And excluding the oven, of course, and the geyser, if you've got a normal geyser, if you put everything on, you kind of cap it at that, then that's the size of your inverter. So add everything together and you can do it just quite simply. You just take all the wattages of all the items and you put it in a spreadsheet or whatever. And then it works out. If it works out at about 4 kilowatts, get yourself a 5 kilowatt inverter. If you're a growing family as well, this is like another thing which I always recommend, is that rather like go for the 8 kilowatt step up one if you've got a growing family. If you haven't got a growing family, then 5. Unless you've got plans to then put an extension on or something, then you will have that for a long time.
Yeah. So if they're running at 5 kilowatts, we'll give them a 10 kilowatt system. Because things do spike and they do switch things, different things on at different times. And so sometimes it will go past the 5, it might go to 6 or 7 and then come back down. Sometimes it'll go to 10, but it'll come back down, but it's not doing 10 continuously.
Okay. Does installing a solar power system increase the value of my house when I resell it?
I recently sold a house and I got a full solar system on there. And, because of that, the value went up as well.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, I just had the personal experience out of it. It's true. You know, I literally sold my house in like 2 days. Look, the house looks nice as well. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it's a shed and I got a solar kit on it. But it was such a big selling point.
Sure, yeah.
Because then, you know, the other thing is, it's myself included, is that I'm going to move into a new house and then I'm going to have to find the cash to buy a system, you know, and then like,
okay, so here's Neil's take on the average cost of a system.
The average system, I would say, is about 150,000 Rand. If you're sizing a system which is like 250,000 rand, you definitely got water heating issues, or you've got like multiple homes on you know, like you've got a big property and you've got like granny flat and stuff like that. Sure. So the average household is normally nowadays 2,500 rand to 3,000 rand type of, right, you know. But yeah, so that's the thing where, you know, you're going to have to find that cash now to go and put in a solar system. Whereas you're going to view this house and it's not off-grid, but it's subsidized by a solar system. Yeah. It's got such an appeal to it already, you know.
So that is not a small amount of money, but we are going to cover the money issue in episode 5, how to afford solar when you can't afford solar. And that is it for episode 2, finding the right solution for you. So what have we learned? We've learned that solar is by far the most common and the most correctly scaled technology for the residential homeowner. We've learned that you can get fully off the grid, but that it's probably not worth it for most people. We've learned that there's a wide range of alternative energy options before you get to a full solar power system, including UPS, a trolley inverter, or as it's sometimes called, a load shedding kit, a battery bank and inverter in your home without panels, and then a full solar power system with solar panels attached. We've learned that the days of the lead acid battery are kind of dead now, and that they're unreliable, they've got a very shallow depth of discharge, and it's simply worth paying the extra money for lithium ion, a technology that's much more advanced, is safer, has a deeper depth of discharge, and will last far, far longer. We've learned that one of the reasons that you should maybe go for the hybrid inverter option, which is the inverter that allows you to still remain connected to Eskom, is that when you turn on certain appliances, they will spike your energy usage quite high, and without the additional help from the main power line, your system will probably trip. This is especially true of anything that creates heat or uses mechanical motion. But I think the most important thing we've learned is the friends we've made along the way, which doesn't even make any sense.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
My name is
Just quickly, I'd like to thank my guests, Jean-Claude Malengret, who's at Rubicon, Neil Barrow at Solar Advice, and Shane Acar from Maxicoms.
And that is it for episode 2. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to help out the show, you can go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review and maybe write something if you feel like it. You can follow the show on Spotify for new episodes. You can pop through to the website to sign up for the newsletter. I'm working on some infographics and guides and tick box stuff for setting yourself up. My name is Jonathan Varnke. I produce this show, and my company is called Pink Productions. We produce podcasts for other people. So if you are a thought leader, a brand, or just a person with a crazy dream, please get in touch and we can have a chat about how I can help you produce a podcast. Otherwise, this week's random shout out is nothing. As I said, I hope you liked the show. Get in touch if you have any questions, queries, or alterations to my information. Have a good one.